First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
It's early yet, but the Jacksonville mayoral race is already heating up. Mayor Curry, meanwhile, announces an important new pick who he'd like to see hired as the city's new chief resiliency officer. And COVID cases are rising again in the city. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. Give us a call now, 549-2937. Then later in the hour, a mural festival at the Performers Academy, and we'll profile a short film being shot in Ortega this weekend that features mostly cast and crew on the autism spectrum. We'll tell you about Mandy's voice. But first, it's Friday, and here to discuss a busy week in the news, we welcome David Bauerlein of the Florida Times-Union. Hey, David.
Hi, Melissa.
Always great to have you on the show. Regular contributor Charles Griggs is here. Hi, Charles. Actually, we'll connect Charles in a moment. Do we have Ann Schindler of First Coast News? Good morning, Ann.
You do. Hey, Melissa.
Good morning. Hey, Ann. So good to have you. And rounding out our panel, Mike Mendenhall of the Jax Daily Record. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning to you all. Let me mention that we are live on the radio, but you can also watch the show via our live video stream on YouTube and Facebook. So join us there, too, as our panel is showing their shining faces to the entire community right now, and we thank them for that. Lots to talk about this week, and we'll go to your calls in a moment. It's 549-2937. Let's begin with our top story. The city's mayor's race is heating up. Yes, already. Now, speculation increased this week that former news anchor and Marathon founder Donna Deegan will enter the 2023 mayoral race following her formation of a political action committee this week called Donna for Duval. Deegan has already said right here on this program that she hasn't ruled out another run for public office. She did lose a congressional bid to Representative John Rutherford in Florida's 4th District in November of 2020. Deegan is certainly a highly visible and well-liked local Democrat who could mount a credible run for mayor in this county, which has seen rapidly changing demographics over the last few years. Let's remind everyone that Joe Biden won this county. That said, it's early yet, and Daniel Davis, the Jax Chamber president and former legislator, has already raised millions. He's expected to get into the race. City Councilman Matt Carlucci and Councilman Al Ferraro, both Republicans, have also filed to run. So here we are talking about the mayor's race 2 years before it even happens. But give us a call and let us know your thoughts, everyone, across Duval and in points beyond. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. David Bauerlein, let's start with you. Donna Deegan is leaning towards running. She will be a guest on this program Monday. How do you see this race shaking out?
Well, I think it's always been a race, and you're right, it's 2 years away. Mm-hmm. But it's always been a race where I think there will be the jungle primary where Democrats, Republicans, everybody's running together. Top two vote getters could go on to the runoff. And I think it's really a race for who's going to be the Republican who emerges from that, who's going to be the Democrat who emerges from that. Right now, Donna Deegan, I would expect she's going to end up running and follow through on what she started here. Then she'd be the front runner for the Democrat to come out of that that primary. I don't think anybody's going to win it outright, so there'd be a runoff between the top two.
Yeah.
So she's a credible candidate. She's shown she can raise a lot of money, a good debater, effective on the stage, which will be important because a lot of people will be making up their minds based on what they see on the debate stage.
Yeah, she did well in her one debate against Congressman Rutherford. Of course, that district, like all of the districts in Florida, is highly gerrymandered. A Democrat, even one as well-known as she is, didn't really have a chance at winning that district. Ann Schindler, Deegan used to work at your organization, First Coast News. Full disclosure, so did I. In fact, I worked there when Donna worked there. You know, as David mentioned, the jungle primary is always interesting in this city. Let's hearken back to the time when it came down to Alvin Brown and Mike Hogan. There were two moderate Republicans running in that cycle, Audrey Moran and Rick Mulaney, but they canceled each other out. So the final two choices came down to a centrist Democrat, Alvin Brown, and a very conservative Republican, Mike Hogan. Republicans threw their support to Brown. He won, shocking the local political establishment. This time, though, let's assume for the sake of argument, Daniel Davis is makes it to the finals against Donna Deegan for the second election. He will have unified Republican support. So the question becomes about turnout. Can Donna Deegan turn out enough Democrats and moderates and independents to take advantage of changing demographics in Duval?
If that is the question, the answer is that's something that is playing out in every city in America. I mean, Democratic mobilization has been high in some elections where it has made a difference, like in Georgia most recently. But that is the question, who motivates the vote to get out? And I should say, in full disclosure, she did work at our station. Her husband still does.
Yes.
He has no, play in our editorial decisions or our coverage. So I just kind of want to make that clear. Mm-hmm. But, Donna satisfies something in the Duval Democratic Party here. Regardless, they didn't even field a candidate in the last mayoral race, which I think is very frustrating when you have a city of Democrats for those Democrats, because they do make up a significant portion of the registered population. Whether they make up a significant portion of the people who turn out to vote, they certainly have the numbers game won in terms of just pure registration. So not fielding solid candidates has been a constant complaint for the local Democratic Party. And so when she challenged Rutherford, for instance, that was giving voice to a lot of people that otherwise, would have been frustrated to see another unchallenged mm-hmm. race for that seat. So, how it all shakes out, obviously to be seen. There's a lot of money that's going to go into this race. It's going to stretch over the next many, many months.
Going to be 2 years of talking about this, mm-hmm. but we are talking about it sorely because, it's a big county. We have more population here than several small states. To win citywide in this huge county, you need a lot of money. You need infrastructure. Charles Griggs, the chairman of the Republican Party of Duval County, Dean Black, put out a statement yesterday saying he was appalled, and I'm quoting, to see that far-left Democrat Donna Deegan is considering a run for mayor of our great city. On the heels of her disastrous campaign for Congress, Deegan clearly views the office of mayor as a consolation prize. He also called her unqualified to lead the largest city in Florida. Former Mayor Alvin Brown may yet get into this race. We'll still have to wait and see about that. The majority of Democrats in Duval County are African American, I believe, at last count, although I think that's starting to change. So what are you hearing about Alvin Brown, Charles, and how do you see his potential entry into this race possibly affecting things?
Well, as a former mayor, certainly he would be able to give voice to another potential run. Former Mayor Brown has not entered into any type of factor. There's been really no noise or rumblings about his potential candidacy. The most important thing at this point right now for Democrats is that they field a candidate that can actually win. Someone, because it was embarrassing the last time that the Democrats put all of their chips into the basket of a Republican. Now, given that Anna Broche was a moderate Republican, still it was embarrassing to the party that that they had to put all their chips in the basket of a moderate Republican. This is significant. In fact, this gives them the opportunity to raise money in a clean way. When I say that, that means that people can feel good about giving their money to a Democratic candidate and not give their money to a soft Republican candidate. So time will tell how her candidacy, Donna's candidacy, flushes out. But what we see on the other side of the scale is that we do have several Republicans. And even though Daniel Davis is softly raising money, that is significant that, you know, we're going to see how many people drop out, how many deals get made for people to go away, and how many people just willing to go head to head in a future race. Because Matt Carlucci, Councilman Matt Carlucci, is seen as a moderate Republican. And Daniel Davis is seen as a conservative Republican, although he probably feels like he's more moderate than anything. But that is where the race is going to be, and how the money is being raised, who lines up behind who based upon their political allegiances. Because the money here in Duval County is long, but it is a small circle of big money, and that is how this community has ridden out for decades now.
Yeah, I think the question so many of us have is, will the same small little group of oligarchs that tend to call the tune on these elections, they tend to decide early who they want the next mayor to be or other public official. They put their money in place early and they usually get their way. And so will that pattern be disrupted this time or not? Jack's Chamber President Daniel Davis has already raised more than $2 million, and he hasn't even filed yet. That gives you an idea of the players behind the scenes bankrolling elections and how things typically work in Duval County. Duval County, call us up as we talk politics, 549-2937. Mike Mendenhall, here's an email from Andrew. He's listening to the show. He says it's about turnout. Miss Deegan can definitely turn out this Republican voter to vote for her and a number of others, I assure you. Mike Mendenhall, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that's a small sample of Republicans, but I mean, just the fact that there are some that, you know, would be willing to support Donna Deegan is definitely a signal. You know, I think too, you know, even though Donna Deegan would be a little behind as far as fundraising from the outset, as the panel has said already, she is very talented at raising money. She knows how to network, and, you know, but she also, you know, has very broad name recognition. She, you know, Daniel Davis, he's, you know, given his position as the chamber president, as well as a former city councilman and state legislator, he does have some name recognition for sure, but Donna Deegan would definitely be recognized for a broader audience, and that is worth a lot of money in itself. And I also think too that we, you know, one of the things we need to consider, if turnout is going to be such a pivotal point for her, this is an off-year election. It's 2023. There won't be a president on the ballot, so that's going to be something that will have to be overcome, because historically, turnout is lighter in a non-presidential year, and Democrats, that's something that Democrats are really going to have to focus on when they're mobilizing their voter outreach. And you know, when you're talking about fundraising too, in recent elections across the country, Democrats have really relied on these small dollar donors. You know, it's been a campaign pitch in many presidential elections too. Is, you know, you've got all, you know, like you said, Melissa, you have a lot of these high dollar donors, you know, pitching into Daniel Davis's possible mayoral run. You know, the Democrats are really going to have to rely on that grassroots fundraising effort to make sure they catch up.
Yeah. Ann Schindler, we have off year elections in this city for a reason. The lower turnout tends to favor Republicans. There have been efforts to change election cycles to go along with the high turnout presidential cycles, and they've failed. As you've covered this as well, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, the money that it costs to put on election is typically the argument to change the cycle. The flip side of that, and what most civic boosters say, is, you know, if this election cycle gets married to a presidential election cycle, all local politics get swallowed by the national conversation. And it's true. I mean, if you're looking just at ad buys, there's no space and nobody can afford, you know, to buy ad time on television. If there's national politics happening, it's not possible. And so for people who are trying to get their message out, lawmakers or, you know, existing elected officials or wannabes, it's very hard in a crowded space like that to get any airtime. I mean, there's just no oxygen in the room. Mm. So, you know, I think people who are, you know, of Jacksonville and kind of steeped in its history, even though that cycle tends to be, as you say, controlled by very few people with very large wallets, it at least is its own distinct political milieu, you know, as opposed to being just completely subsumed in a political conversation that's a national one.
And let me point out, we will host Donna Deegan on Monday's show. We've hosted candidate Matt Carlucci. We hope to host Daniel Davis, the Jack's Chamber president, and also Al Ferraro. Those are all of the names in the mix right now. 549-2937. Speaking of mayors, Mayor Lenny Curry picked a candidate for chief resiliency officer for the city. This is a new position, a person that will be charged with helping Jacksonville prepare for the impacts of climate change. Curry points out Ann Koglianese, rather, has previous experience with New Orleans Coastal Resiliency Program. Here's Curry on this program yesterday.
When I interviewed her, what I really liked about her was, I mean, she is, this is her passion. She's driven by this. She wants to get it right. She understands this is a long vision and a long play. And I'm excited about her coming to Jacksonville, and I'm excited about the community meeting her.
Now, Koglianese was also on the Obama administration's climate preparedness and resiliency team. She's expected to take office Monday, July 19th, if the city council approves her appointment. David Bauerlein, Florida Times Union, we're the last major city in Florida to even make this kind of hire. We're just behind the eight ball on getting serious about resiliency. That said, at least someone is now going to be leading this effort for Duval County.
Right. It's been a long time coming. Certainly, it is a long play, as the mayor talked about just then. There's going to be some money in the proposed budget, it looks like, for resiliency efforts, like $50 million over 5 years in the proposed capital improvement program. So there will actually be some money to perhaps put some programs in effect. But as we know, that's the proverbial drop in the bucket when you look at the enormity of the challenge and that's posed by climate change, rising water, flooding. And part of it is just defining what exactly is this resiliency officer going to be. Is it going to be somebody who tackles flooding that we've had for decades in this city? Is it somebody who's looking at what's the long-term climate outlook and how do we change land use policies? It's really a large array of options. And how's that role going to be defined and how much influence does she have?
Right. Particularly in a new administration, which, as we've been talking about, will be happening in a couple of years. Charles Griggs, Jacksonville was supposed to get a resiliency chief in 2016 because we received funding from the Rockefeller Foundation's 100 Resilient Cities Initiative. We dropped out of that program. We could have gotten $1 million to begin the work of addressing extreme weather, sea level rise, and even crime. So, this work grows even more urgent. We just saw Tropical Storm Elsa brush by us with just some wind and rain. We've got a long storm season ahead. And then even going beyond hurricane season, we know from climate scientists that water rise, erosion, inland flooding, which is a big problem in this city, these are all going to become extremely urgent matters for people that are managing our public works and our city planning. This is going to only become more urgent.
Yeah, so sure, late to the game, but this position is for real. This young lady is a real professional at doing this, as the mayor mentioned in his comments. But part of this job is going to be convincing the community that this is some necessary work. And many people believe that this still had, resiliency is something that hasn't won over the community in terms of perception, in terms of need. I think what was good about this process is that it came through the Special Committee on Resiliency. The recommendation was made to make the hire, and the hire was made. But, behind all of that, all of the work, with information coming out from the media, especially with efforts, shameless plug for WJCT, adapt, and we've been, you know, trying to get the information out regarding the potential for this community to suffer from its this current environmental course. This is going to be a tough task for this position, for this job, or whoever mm-hmm. sits in it, to convince the community in total that change needs to happen, and it's going to be a long-term effort to make it so this community can be resilient for the future.
Mike Mendenhall, this does require city council approval. There were a few council reps, I think, who were surprised by this announcement. That said, she is likely to be approved, yes? Hey, Mike, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me, Melissa?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, sorry about that.
No problem.
Yeah, no, I do think that she's likely to be approved. Typically Mayor Curry's appointees have gone through. There was some hesitancy, you know, I think amongst some members of the city council originally when chief resiliency officer position was announced, but I do think it'll be approved. And the question is really, you know, how much authority too is as David was alluding to earlier, this new position going to be given, and what will the form take? In this city, we're very pro development, and you know, as we, right now you're hearing the debate on development on the riverfront with Shad Khan's proposed Four Seasons, as well as you know other riverfront developments that are currently happening. So resiliency is definitely a topic, but having a position like this could give some of these activist groups, some people that really would like to see more resilient green space and larger setbacks along our waterfront, a voice in the city, and at least you know somebody with some authority that could really educate and possibly convince our city lawmakers that these changes could be necessary.
It's 549-2937. If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable with Mike Mendenhall, Charles Griggs, Ann Schindler, David Bauerlein, and yours truly as we talk about the biggest stories of the week. People are waiting on hold to talk about vaccinations and COVID. Just letting you know, we'll get to that in a moment. Again, it's 549-2937. Now, speaking of mayoral movements, I want to get all of your opinions about these new billboards that Mayor Lenny Curry put up this week in L.A., Chicago, New York, and Washington, D.C., advertising the website movetojax.net. The billboard in D.C. reads, "Ditch your swamp for ours." The one in New York shows Curry taking a bite out of an apple, a reference to the Big Apple, saying, you know, come down here. There's no state taxes. Your paycheck will go farther. The one in Chicago shows people freezing in Chicago in January and then says something like, move to Jacksonville, enjoy our beautiful beaches year round. Curry's chief of staff, Jordan Ellsbury, told our partner News for Jax that they are trying to capitalize on Jacksonville's rapid growth, particularly in this pandemic. He also defended putting Mayor Curry on the billboards to make the direct ask to residents of these big cities to consider Jacksonville. They claim the website movetojax.net has received over 2,000 page views since Monday. Okay, Ann Schindler, these billboards have taken a lot of criticism on social media. People think they're cheesy. They've taken hits at them. What are your thoughts?
Social media is that kind of a place,
yes,
I guess.
Yes, it is.
You know, I think it's the mayor's money, essentially. I mean, all of the council members and the mayor get a contingency fund that allows them to sort of a discretionary spending account to use for their priorities. He's decided to try to make a splash in these four cities. It's not inexpensive. I mean, it's $40,000 right off the bat for this initial month effort. But, you know, I also spoke to Ellsbury yesterday, and he says, you know, look, this is an opportunity that we see to take advantage of these digital nomads that now know that they can work from home. And instead of having to work in their tiny cramped apartment in New York or their really expensive apartment in Los Angeles, they can come here and we have beaches and no state taxes. You know, it's not untrue. I mean, it's not that out of the realm to make that pitch at this time. You know, I did ask him why the mayor chose to make himself the face of this, as the sales pitch or the salesperson. And he said he's a natural choice. He's the guy that we send out, you know, when we do national media, he's the elected official. So he's the face of the city. But obviously, he has his own baggage. There is a federal investigation.
Yeah.
You know, that's going on, a criminal probe into this whole JEA fiasco that he sort of distanced himself from, but also helmed behind the scenes. And so, you know, the joke about the swamp is a little bit on the nose.
A little too on the nose.
For some people. Yeah.
Yeah. David Bauerlein, you know, I've been following the conversation about these, and people locally, more than anything, they seem to be offended by the mayor putting himself in the ads, in the on the billboards. And so I guess my thinking on that is only that people in the cities where these have been placed, they don't know Lenny Curry's story. They're just going to see the website and Google it and maybe think about Jacksonville as a new place to either visit or even live, which is the goal of all of this. $45,000 spend, that's not a lot of money. Will it translate to actual population growth here? Who can say? But certainly people are moving here. As Ann said, we're one of the top cities in the country for digital nomads. We've been seeing that all through the pandemic.
Yeah, that's definitely been the case. And yeah, there's an argument that the stars are in alignment for this type of a campaign. It's not untypical for the mayor to be the public face of the city in these type of campaigns. It's who would go to talk to a company in another state who's thinking about relocating here. So in a sense, you're talking to these one-person companies, these digital nomads, about relocating in terms of an economic development pitch. So, I mean, I don't think that's out of the ordinary to have the mayor be the public face of a campaign like this. I did Ann's comment about the ditch your swamp for hours. In some ways, on the one hand, it's one of the most clever of the lines because obviously it's the swamp and Washington, D.C. government for our sort of swampy terrain here. But then you think about it again, it's like, well, maybe that'll be interpreted a different way, which is you're just, you know, the swamp of local government affairs. But I mean, it's I don't think that it's going to cause anybody to immediately move. It maybe it plants the seed in a few people and they end up coming this way.
Yeah. I mean, Charles, that's something that I was thinking about driving into work today. People in Chicago, New York, Washington, et cetera, or LA, that's where these billboards are. When they think of Florida, they typically think of Disney and South Beach. We are not on the radar of most people in most of these cities. So if nothing else, this does, as David said, it plants the seed of another option for people that might be looking at Florida. We're just, Jacksonville has not marketed itself, I don't think, very well as they try to compete with these other Florida destinations, at least not in the past.
Well, and truthfully, the Chamber does typically market Jacksonville to in other markets and other areas of the country and even internationally.
But let me just jump in. Wouldn't you say they market Amelia Island better, say, than they market Jacksonville proper? That's my only point.
Yeah, I think that included in the amenities or the allure to coming to Jacksonville are these other surrounding areas, definitely. This campaign, you know, albeit goofy, probably is, you know, we're talking about it, for example, right? So it's working.
So it's working in that regard,
at some particular point. We're working in that regard, and it probably will catch a little bit of fire in terms of what happens across the country in those particular markets. You know, people may find find it humorous, but you know, we do have a challenge here with image. We do have a challenge with location. We have an NFL franchise, and many people across the country, those 31 other teams, don't know which part of the state Jacksonville is located.
Right.
You know, so we do have an image problem. There's probably nothing wrong with, you know, with trying to figure out a way to draw a little bit more attention to it. We just don't want it to backfire. And social media can be a cruel place to wander from time to time. but in this respect, though, Mayor Curry having this picture on there probably is the funniest thing about these, and the lines too, but the funniest thing about these ads is that I don't know, he runs the risk of being taken as some type of cartoon character down the road. But I think he had to be brave to do it. I hope they had to talk him into it, but I certainly probably wouldn't have.
I mean, Mike Mendenhall, people are comparing these to, you know, like the 1-800-ASK-GARY type billboards and just find them to be incredibly cheesy. But my only rejoinder to that is, have you seen the billboards in some of these northern cities? But, and I want to give a shout out to the late Bill Brinton, who many of you know was instrumental in fighting legally to protect this region of Florida from being overrun with what he considered to be visual blight billboards. Most of these other metros, billboards are everywhere, simply everywhere. And as you drive around town today, take note of the fact that we do have some, but we would have a whole lot more if it weren't for his efforts. And he did pass away recently, but that was the legacy he left Jacksonville. He did not want to see the visual blight of billboards every few feet on I-95, for example, or other places. Mike Mendenhall.
Yeah, that's a good point, Melissa. I mean, we have the, you know, this billboard campaign is kind of does, you know, have that. It is kind of ironic that they're using that billboard campaign, given that we're kind of adverse to it here. But, you know, I mean, I think these billboards are meant to be kind of tongue in cheek, and you know, it definitely would turn some heads initially. You know, maybe a little bit more so than a traditional, you know, marketing campaign, something that looks a little more polished. But you know, I think that as Ann pointed out, you know, the contingency fund that the mayor has, it's his discretion to use. And being from the Midwest myself, I will say that I'm totally willing to walk on the beach in January, but if in Northeast Florida, I don't think you'll find me in my swimming trunks. So stretching there, but I think that, you know, people are looking at Jacksonville, where our population has grown exponentially in the last few years. It's increased during the pandemic. Housing prices are starting to rise again, but they were relatively low, compared to other coastal cities. You know, so I think there is an argument to be made that this is the time to market the city more broadly and more directly to individuals as opposed to just corporations and businesses.
Let's go to Dave. He's calling from Amelia Island. Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call this morning.
Sure.
I wanted to first say that I thought Mayor Curry's plan to promote Jacksonville is terrific. And what some people might want to remember is that a lot of the really good, high-paying employers have come here via migration and recruitment like this. Fidelity National Financial, Black Knight, FIS, recently done in Bradstreet. Those are all companies that that somehow found Jacksonville, and I think it's great that the city and the mayor have taken the time to try and draw others like that to bring in other quality opportunities for people that live in the area.
Thanks for that, Dave. 549-2937, Calvin on the South Side. Hey, Calvin, go ahead.
Hey, Melissa, thanks for taking my call too. Hey, I just wanted to make a quick comment. So let me make sure I got this straight. It's wrong for Nikki Haley to put her picture on a little dinky stamp that gets associated with the Department of Agriculture here. But it's okay for and to spend government. It's wrong to spend government money on that. But it's okay to spend government money to put Lenny's picture 20 feet high on billboards. What's your definition of hypocrisy? Call it both ways, ref. Okay, bye.
All right, Calvin. Thanks for that. And you can check out the billboards on our website at wjct.org. And you can judge for yourself. Okay, the other big story from the week, COVID. Florida officials reported 15,684 coronavirus cases over the seven-day period from June 25th to July 1st. That's a 35% increase. We've have in Duval County an 11.1% positive test rate, the highest proportion of positive tests of any major metro in the state. 213 new deaths over the last week across Florida. Friends and family of Jacksonville City Councilwoman Jacoby Pittman continue to ask for prayers as she is hospitalized with the virus. And so David Bauerlein, Florida Times Union, we, as public health experts keep saying in recent weeks, we have increasingly two populations in this country and in our area, the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. 99.9% of the cases of COVID coming in now to hospitals as this Delta variant of the virus surges have not been vaccinated. And it's simply that if you're vaccinated, you are far less likely to need oxygen and be seriously ill. So David, what about efforts to get this region and this state to the 70% vaccination rate, which is the goal?
Yeah, they have a long way to go. And the trend lines that you mentioned, certain metro areas, the metro areas that have lower infection rates have higher vaccination rates than Duval County does. It's kind of odd to me that the county has had such a hard time getting a higher vaccination rate. You had two mega sites, one at Regency Square, the other at Gateway Mall. You had a site at Edward Waters University. You had all the pharmacy sites. You had the vice president of the United States come here for a personal visit and urge people to get vaccinated. Perhaps there hasn't been enough day-to-day promotion of the vaccines. And that's why it's just not as good here in terms of the vaccination rate as it is in other metro areas. But it looks like vaccinations are leveling off. I'd be shocked or surprised or pleasantly surprised maybe if it got to 70%, but I don't even know if it's going to get to 60%.
I know. Ann Schindler in Florida, teens aged 12 to 19 had the highest positivity rate of any age group during the last week. Pediatricians are seeing more kids coming in who are sick. Kids younger than 12 are still the only people that can't get the vaccination yet. They're making up a growing share of new cases. When children go back to school this August, masks will be optional. This is worrisome for some parents.
Yeah, as it should be. I also am seeing and hearing, knowing personally, people who have had the vaccine. And because this variant is so contagious, are getting COVID. And they're getting possibly less severe cases of COVID, not necessarily requiring hospitalizations, but they're still getting sick. And that is because there is, this particularly difficult variant, is strong. And so while the vaccine helps diminish the impact, until more people are vaccinated, it's not going to prevent you entirely from getting ill. One of my coworkers had their daycare shut down because a teacher there contracted the virus. And, I do think that there is going to be a point in the near future where more people in these types of environments like schools are just going to mandate vaccines for all of the, instructors and basically for the staff because of this, continued issue with contagion and sure. Vaccine hesitancy.
I mean, kids have to get a slew of other vaccines to go to school. Eric in Arlington. Hi, Eric, go ahead. I know you've been holding a long time.
Thanks, Melissa. Yeah, I've had a while to think about what I was going to say. So I was just thinking that one thing about this country that I really don't like, United States of America, is that you can say whatever you want and be completely forgiven for it. And what I mean by that is, like, if there's a hurricane that hits a city in a conservative state, the Republican governors who talk about how evil the federal government is can't cash that check fast enough. So another example is these people that with the COVID virus. For the past year or so, more than a year, we've had to listen to these people riot, call Dr. Fauci all kinds of names or whatever, refuse to wear a mask, refuse to social distance. Who knows how many people the people that have refused the advice of public health officials have killed in this process. So just this morning, I want to say that that trend of forgiving, and when people get COVID that aren't vaccinated, they go to the hospital, they're still admitted. I don't know. I think we should start refusing admittance to people that aren't vaccinated.
Oh, you know what, Eric? Come on, Eric. You know, doctors take the Hippocratic Oath. They treat everyone who needs it. But I get your point about the frustration with people who refuse to mask or vaccinate. I get it, Eric. I do. I mean, Charles Griggs, it's simply a fact that if, you know, as Eric pointed out, if we had all gotten to a higher vaccination rate earlier, we would not be in as bad a shape as we are now with this. We'd still have the pandemic with us. We might not be, we certainly wouldn't have had, I should say, as many deaths as we've had in this country.
So we still have a problem. And there are people out there who just do not believe that COVID-19 is a problem. There are people who are vaccine hesitant because they think this is a simple virus and all they need to do is take, you know, some simple precautions and this too shall pass. That is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a culture that believes that the vaccine is a human experiment and that they're going to wait until 2 years from now to see if this vaccine is going to give everybody a third eye. And in doing so, we're putting the population at risk. I've heard so many stories about the vaccine, people who are vaccine hesitant, that it is unbelievable. I mean, we've been following these public health practices for decades. And all of a sudden, they don't want to apply during this particular pandemic. So science is science. And we, the way the CDC and all of the professionals work is they use information to give us the best recommendations and the best advice possible. And in doing so, we better protect ourselves from viruses such as this. We can, this community can do better, but we do have a lot of people out there who are still vaccine hesitant because they think there's something wrong with the vaccine.
I know.
In it. And that is going to hurt them.
I know.
And that is what we're fighting.
I know. And please, everyone, it's not true. The vaccine is safe and it will protect you. Please get it. Mark in Orange Park emails us, what if Shad Khan offered a $20 discount on season tickets to the vaccinated? Mark, that's not a bad idea. Speaking of Shad Khan, the city's Downtown Investment Authority this week approved Jaguars owner Shad Khan's plan for a Four Seasons hotel development on the downtown riverfront. Mike Mendenhall, supporters of this say Khan can tap an unfilled luxury market in this metro with the construction of the Four Seasons, which will be very expensive to stay. Can he do it? Your thoughts?
Well, I definitely think he can build it, but
will they come?
Will they come? Yeah. I mean, yeah, CBRE, which is a real estate brokerage here nationwide that has a presence in Jacksonville, did a report for the Jaguars showing the market was, could handle a Four Seasons. They were really focused on the downtown market, because there isn't a five-star luxury product currently in our downtown. The argument is that, when business travelers, leisure travelers who have a lot of money, they come to Jacksonville. They don't want to stay in downtown, so they go to Amelia Island or Ponte Vedra. So and professional or people in the hotel industry that I've spoken with, they think there could be a market in downtown Jacksonville for this particular type of product. But, you know, I think Shad Khan admitted himself that the profit margins, especially initially, wouldn't be very high, that there would be, that he's taking on a calculated risk in building a product like this downtown. I think it's really more of a long-term play to try to do something to try to spur more development, particularly in the sports and entertainment district. I guess time will tell still if people will actually, you know, go stay at this hotel. But I think that city council wants it because they want the prestige of having a Four Seasons brand hotel downtown. I think, when you compare this deal to the failed deal of Lot J, I think it's much more of a traditional incentive package that the DIA approved. It's very comparable to other development packages that they've passed. So I do think it's going to happen, but we'll see if the market can bear it.
We will see. Okay, with 2 minutes left until the break, time for a very quick lightning round. I can't get enough of that cheesy sound effect. I'll start. David Bauerlein, demo is going to start on the downtown Bergman Tower. That's my contribution for the week. What's on your radar?
Well, it's not the 4th of July weekend, so everybody have a nice, peaceful weekend and not have to worry about it being in a war zone with smoke everywhere. That's my forecast for the weekend.
I love that. Ann Schindler.
Not so much to the fourth, but David's point, after a week of working in television during this storm, I hope we just have a quiet, peaceful, non-Elsa weekend.
Me too. Charles Griggs.
Well, I can't help but bring up the fact that this guy, Jacob Danner, found a 4-inch megalodon shark tooth. This is the second time finding one in 3 weeks. He found a 3-inch one 3 weeks ago. And this shark would have been probably about 60 feet long.
Oh my gosh, so, I actually know him. That's really cool. And Mike Mendenhall.
They said the Berkman's coming down, other projects in downtown continue to go up. The old Ambassador Hotel, the historic building, is up for final design approval with the DDRB next week. So, more historic buildings in downtown look like they're going to be revamped.
Thank you so much, everyone, for your insights and your hard work covering this community. Mike Mendenhall, Ann Schindler, David Bauerlein, and Charles Griggs. Have a great weekend, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks, Melissa.
Same to you, Melissa.
Some arts and culture news and notes when we come back. Don't go away.
UGCT News 89.9.
She's a former police chief and a member of Congress. Now Orlando's Val Demings has set her sights on Marco Rubio. I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
This week, a conversation with Congresswoman Val Demings on her race for the U.S. Senate. Plus, that moratorium on evictions is set to run out. What does it mean for Florida renters?
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
This Friday at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
The operation in Surfside turns from rescue to recovery. In New York, Eric Adams closes in on the race to become the city's next mayor. A special session in Texas brings election law back into the spotlight. And in Georgia, one presidential couple marks a special wedding anniversary. Much more on the Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, come on out to the Performers Academy this weekend for their outdoor mural festival. TPA Fest will feature a 3-day interactive 12 mural project on their site, spearheaded by local artist Nicole Nico Holderbaum. The Performers Academy provides high-quality arts programming to high-risk youth in the city. They offer teens exposure to artistic experiences as healthy coping mechanisms and platforms of free expression. They hope to raise at least $16,000 to provide free programming for the upcoming school year. Check it out and visit the Mural Fest this weekend. Going to be a lot of fun. Also this weekend, a short film is being produced in town, and it's about a nonverbal autistic teen. What's unique is that cast and crew are mostly all on the autism spectrum as well. Roxanna Lewis is the director and producer of Mandy's Voice, and she's on the line. Roxanna, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. So happy to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you. So tell us about Mandy's Voice. You're shooting in the Ortega neighborhood this weekend.
We are.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. We are shooting Mandy's Voice this weekend in Ortega, and we have a team of about 15 individuals working behind the scenes, and our core team is Josh Hansborough, the director of photography, Sharon Cobb, our screenwriter, Monique Madrid, producer, myself, and this film, like you said, it's really locally grown. It's inspired by the true life events of a few exceptional nonverbal teens who reside in an organization called Peace of Heart. And that's an innovative environment of belonging persons to persons with autism specifically. And the idea for Mandy's Voice sparked after Josh Hansborough, our DP of Punta Vedra, made a really powerful documentary about the non-for-profit organization. And then he brought some ideas to Sharon to write Mandy's Voice, and then they brought me in to work closely in bringing this life to the script to life. And in doing so, I was in the middle of COVID when we're all feeling just everything is really crazy. I was really steadfast in the vision to cast authentically. And we looked at a lot of really wonderful actors locally in Atlanta and L.A., and it just wasn't working. I was really aware that there was a shortage of representation on screens that celebrate the voice, the portrayal, and employment of individuals with different abilities. So we wanted to put our money where our mouth is. And I remember calling out to the team and saying, you know, we don't need thousands of people to audition. We just need the right few. And we're looking for them. They're looking for us. We just need to call out to each other and find each other. And I think I got like so many crazy looks. But the truth is, that's exactly what happened. And we were able to bring in Rachel Barcelona, who's an international spokeswoman for autism, who was diagnosed with autism at the age of 3. She's playing our lead, Mandy. She's spoken all over the world, including the United Nations. Rachel's an actress, author, and a model, and a co-host of a radio TV show in New York that's just been picked up by NBC, so we're really excited for her. And I was able to bring in the co-star, Karen Silas, who is a professional actress. She took the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance for her feature film, What Happened Was, and then that launched her into a career on CBS Under Suspicion. She's done Law and Order, The Sopranos, and she plays Mandy's mom. And introducing our very own local Crystal Thompson. Crystal is the founder and clinical director of Believe Autism here in Jacksonville, where she's worked with individuals with autism since 2005. She also happens to be a Latin dance performer, which I love, and offers creative dance and art to students. This is her very first time ever behind a camera, and she plays the role of a therapist. And then joining us from the Orlando area are Amy Nielsen and her son, Barkley. Amy is the mother of 4 children ranging from 33 to 6, and she spent nearly 20 years as an elementary and middle school educator. When her youngest was diagnosed with autism, she started Big Abilities, which is a blog and a podcast, and she's now an author and a special needs parent advocate. And her youngest, Barkley, is in the film as well. So this has been a really just a very passion-driven, organic team effort to bring this film to life. And this is to date, and you're welcome to correct me, but I believe we're the first, if not the first, amongst the first, who are casting authentically with people on the spectrum and who are neurodivergent, both in front of the camera and also who are working on our crew. And we didn't intend for that to be our goal, but it feels really good to do this in the middle. We started in the middle of this pandemic, which has been hard for everybody, and we also did it with almost no money.
Yeah, I know exactly. Having made a film myself on almost no money, I know exactly what you mean. Now, let me just quickly say, since we're almost out of time, you'll be shooting actually next weekend in Ortega, so people might be able to spot you there.
It would be amazing. It would be amazing. And yes, we'll be shooting in Ortega next week. We hopefully will be seen around town. And also, if people would like more information, mandysvoicefilm.com is always, please stop by and check us out there. And I can be reached if you have more questions on Instagram at Roxana Lewis. And then we plan on bringing this film out to film festivals. And then ultimately our goal is, of course, to come back to Jacksonville to screen right here and to use this film and community outreach. Yeah.
All right. Well, kudos, Roxana. Roxana Lewis, director, producer of Mandy's Voice, shooting in the region this month. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Melissa.
Thank you. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers, along with producer Heather Schatz, director Josh Torres, news director Jessica Palumbo, and digital editor Bill Bortzfeld. Make sure to join the Florida Roundup today at noon. It's our statewide show, rounding up the biggest stories from across the Sunshine State. Our first guest, Congresswoman Val Demings. We'll ask her about her campaign to unseat Senator Marco Rubio. That is sure to be an interesting Senate race. I'm Melissa Ross. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.